A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been building a home inventory system for years. Warranties, spec sheets, photos, the works. And he's hit a problem that anyone who's ever tried to find a manual for a discontinued rice cooker will recognize instantly. For the top 20% of products. The big brands, the stuff Amazon sells by the truckload. PDFs are everywhere. Manufacturer sites, Amazon product pages, you're covered. But there's a long tail of products from smaller companies where the manual simply doesn't exist online. Daniel scans his own copies for his personal archive, and every time he does, he thinks, I should upload this so the next person can find it. But then the copyright question stops him cold. So today we're looking at who's already crowdsourcing this, what the legal landscape actually says, and whether Daniel should hit upload or hit delete.
The thing that makes this interesting is that it's not a technology problem. The scanning is trivial. The hosting is cheap. The obstacle is entirely legal, and it's a legal framework that was built for books and records and films, not for the instruction booklet that came with a hairdryer in 1994.
And the hairdryer company folded in 1997, and nobody knows who owns the rights to a 20-page booklet about heat settings.
So let's start with what's actually out there. The projects that have tried to solve this.
And the different ways they've navigated the copyright question, because they're not all on the same footing.
The biggest one by volume is ManualsLib. They've got millions of manuals, everything from major appliances to obscure industrial equipment. And their legal posture is, well, it's honest about what they are. Their terms of service are explicit. You must own the copyright or have permission from the rights holder to upload anything. They're not claiming these manuals are public domain. They're not making a fair use argument. They're a hosting platform with a notice and takedown system under the DMCA.
And their takedown page isn't a casual thing. I looked at it. It requires a physical signature, the specific URL of the infringing file, a statement under penalty of perjury. This is a formal legal process. They're not making it easy to issue a drive-by complaint.
Right. And that's the DMCA safe harbor at work. The platform isn't liable for what users upload as long as they respond to valid takedown notices. But, and this is the part that matters for Daniel, the safe harbor protects ManualsLib. It doesn't protect the uploader.
So if a manufacturer sends a takedown notice, ManualsLib removes the file and they're in the clear. The person who uploaded it still infringed.
Still infringed. And copyright statutory damages aren't a joke. Under Section 504 of the Copyright Act, willful infringement can hit $150,000 per work. Now, is a manufacturer going to sue an individual who uploaded a vacuum cleaner manual? Almost certainly not. The practical risk is low, but the legal exposure is real, and it's worth understanding what you're actually doing when you click upload.
The $150,000 is the statutory maximum, not the likely outcome. But even the floor is meaningful.
The floor for non-willful infringement is $750 per work. Still, not nothing. And the thing about statutory damages is that they exist precisely because actual damages are hard to prove. The law doesn't require the rights holder to show they lost money. The infringement itself creates liability.
So ManualsLib is option one. What else is out there?
Manuals Online is another aggregator. Smaller, less comprehensive, but operating on a similar model. User uploads, DMCA compliance, terms that prohibit uploading copyrighted material without permission. Then there are the niche archives. ServiceManuals.net focuses on vintage electronics, old stereo equipment, ham radios, that kind of thing. These smaller sites often operate in a grayer zone because they're too small to attract attention, but their legal exposure is actually higher. They may not have the formal DMCA infrastructure that the big platforms maintain.
And then there's the Internet Archive, which is a different animal entirely.
Completely different. The Internet Archive's manual collection wasn't built by random users uploading PDFs. They scanned physical copies from library collections. so their legal footing relies on their status as a library and on fair use arguments. They're doing preservation work. They're a non-profit. They're not competing with a commercial market for manuals.
Although that fair use argument took a serious hit recently.
The Hachette case, 2024. The publishers sued over the Internet Archive's controlled digital lending program for books, and the court ruled that scanning and lending entire books without a license wasn't fair use. The ruling narrowed the scope of what the archive can do with copyrighted material, and even though that case was specifically about books, the reasoning affects everything they scan. If scanning a book for lending isn't fair use, scanning a manual for distribution is on even shakier ground.
Because a manual doesn't have the same cultural preservation argument that a book does. A court is going to look at a scanned novel and see a library doing library things. A scanned microwave manual? That's harder to fit into the fair use framework.
The four-factor fair use test doesn't care about cultural significance, though. It cares about the purpose and character of the use, the nature of the copyrighted work, the amount used, and the effect on the market. A manual actually scores reasonably well on some of those. It's factual rather than creative, which weighs in favor of fair use. The market harm is usually minimal because nobody is selling the manual. But you're reproducing the entire work, which weighs against you. And the purpose factor is tricky. Preservation isn't one of the enumerated fair use purposes in the statute. Education, criticism, commentary, news reporting, those are the categories.
So, the Internet Archive's manual collection is on a different legal footing than Manuals Lib, but it's not bulletproof either.
Nothing in this space is bulletproof, and that brings us to the core legal problem, the long tail of orphaned documentation.
Let's define that. An orphan work is a copyrighted work whose owner can't be identified or located. The manual for a product from a company that dissolved in 2004. The copyright still exists, but there's nobody to ask for permission.
And this is where the law and reality just completely diverge. For works made for hire, which covers almost all product manuals, since they're created by employees or contractors, copyright lasts 95 years from publication or 120 years from creation, whichever is shorter.
So a manual published in 1995 is under copyright until 2090.
2090. The company that made the product hasn't existed for 30 years. The engineers are retired or dead. The brand was bought and sold twice, and nobody knows who holds the IP. But the copyright is still valid for another 64 years. And there's no mechanism to clear it.
The U.S. Copyright Office has been trying to fix this for decades.
They've proposed orphan works legislation multiple times. The most recent serious attempt was 2015. The idea was to create a system where if you do a good faith search for the rights holder and can't find them, you get limited liability if they later surface. You'd still have to pay reasonable compensation, but you wouldn't face statutory damages. It's a sensible compromise. It never passed.
What stopped it?
Photographers and visual artists lobbied hard against it. Their concern was that their work is especially easy to orphan. Images get separated from attribution metadata all the time, and a liability shield for users of orphan works would effectively legalize widespread infringement of photography. The licensing market for stock photography is real money. Manuals don't have a licensing market, but the law doesn't distinguish.
So the orphan works problem for manuals is collateral damage from a fight about photography.
Pretty much. And that's been the state of things for a decade. No legislation, no regulatory fix, just a growing pile of manuals that are legally inaccessible and practically irreplaceable.
Okay, so let's talk about what this means for Daniel specifically. He scans a manual for a product from a company that no longer exists. He uploads it to Manuals Lib. What's the actual risk?
The legal answer and the practical answer are different. Legally, he's infringing. The copyright is still valid, he doesn't have permission, and uploading a full reproduction to a public website is distribution, which is one of the exclusive rights the copyright holder has. The DMCA doesn't give him a defense, it gives the platform a defense.
And the practical answer?
The practical answer is that nobody is suing individuals for uploading old product manuals. I can't find a single case. The economics don't make sense. There are no damages to recover. The defendant is an individual with limited assets, and the PR would be terrible. A company that sued its own customers for helping other customers use its products? That's not a story any brand wants.
But the exposure exists, and Daniel's the kind of person who actually reads terms of service and worries about this stuff. That's the whole reason he asked.
Right, and there's a middle path. Before uploading anything, check whether the manufacturer has a published policy on manual reproduction. Some companies are explicit about it. Brother, for example, they make PDFs freely available on their site and don't restrict downloading or personal use. If a company has affirmatively made manuals available, uploading to an aggregator is less risky, not because the copyright is waived, but because the company's behavior suggests they won't enforce.
The problem is, the companies that don't exist anymore, you can't check their policy. There's nobody to ask.
And that's the long tail. That's where the Orphan Works problem bites hardest. The very manuals that are most valuable to preserve, the ones for products where the manufacturer is gone and the documentation would otherwise be lost, are the ones with the least clear legal path.
There's a knock-on effect here that I think is worth naming. The copyright chill doesn't just affect Daniel, it affects the whole ecosystem. The people most likely to have rare manuals, hobbyists, repair technicians, people who buy storage units at auction, are also the most risk-averse about uploading. They're not lawyers. They hear copyright infringement, and they stop. So the manuals that are hardest to find are the ones least likely to be shared. It's a negative feedback loop.
And the loss is real. I'm not being dramatic about this. Product manuals contain information that you literally can't get anywhere else. Torque specifications for a discontinued engine. The pinout diagram for a vintage synthesizer. The calibration procedure for a piece of lab equipment. When the manual is gone, that knowledge is gone.
Unless someone ignored the copyright risk and uploaded it anyway.
Which is exactly what happens. The entire crowdsourced manual ecosystem runs on people deciding the practical benefit outweighs the legal exposure. And I'm not sure that's wrong, but it's not a legal argument.
The right to repair movement intersects with this in an interesting way. As states pass right to repair laws, manufacturers are being compelled to provide documentation for current products, but those laws don't retroactively cover the long tail. So you've got a legal right to the manual for a 2026 product, but not for a 1996 product. The archive becomes de facto right to repair infrastructure, built on legally shaky ground.
One through legislation, one through civil disobedience. Neither one is fully adequate on its own.
The comparison to other crowdsourced documentation projects is instructive. Wikipedia uses fair use for images. They've got a detailed policy about when a copyrighted image can be used without permission, and it's tied to educational purpose and minimal use. Project Gutenberg focuses exclusively on public domain works. They do the copyright research before anything goes up. The manual aggregators are doing neither. They're not making a fair use case, and they're not limiting themselves to public domain. They're just hosting and waiting for takedown notices.
Which is a functioning system in practice. It's just not one that provides any legal comfort to the uploader.
Let's talk about what Daniel can actually do. If he wants to contribute to the commons without losing sleep, what's the path?
Step 1. Check for explicit permission. Some manufacturers have a page about manual distribution. Some have even released manuals under permissive terms. It's rare, but it's worth 5 minutes of searching.
Step 2. If the company exists and there's no policy, he could ask. Send an email. The worst they can do is say no, and occasionally they say yes.
Step 3. If the company doesn't exist, he's in Orphan Works territory. At that point, the options are to upload to a platform with a clear DMCA process, Manuals Lib for example, and accept the residual risk, or to keep the scan in his personal archive and not distribute it.
There's a fourth option that nobody talks about. Donate the physical manual to a library. The Internet Archive accepts physical donations, and they have the institutional infrastructure to handle the copyright questions. It's slower. It's less satisfying than uploading a PDF and seeing it appear instantly, but it roots around the personal liability problem.
That's actually a great point. Libraries have different legal protections than individuals. If a library scans a manual for preservation purposes, Section 108 of the Copyright Act gives them specific rights that don't apply to private citizens. It's still not a blanket permission, but it's a much stronger position.
And the library can make the scan available in ways that are legally defensible. Controlled access, non-commercial use, tied to a specific research purpose.
The downside is that library digitized manuals often end up behind access restrictions that make them harder to find than the Wild West aggregator sites. The Internet Archive's manual collection is searchable, but a lot of library scanned materials are in institutional repositories that don't show up in Google.
So there's a trade-off between accessibility and legality. The more accessible the manual, the more legally exposed the person who made it accessible.
That's the tension in one sentence, and it's not going away. The copyright term for works made for hire is fixed by statute. 95 years from publication. Congress could shorten it. Congress could create an orphan works exception. Congress has done neither, and there's no serious legislative effort underway right now.
What about the argument that manuals shouldn't be copyrightable at all? They're functional documents. Instructions. There's no creative expression in a talk specification.
The Copyright Office actually addressed this a long time ago. Blank forms and recipes aren't copyrightable because they're purely functional. There's no creative expression. But a manual that includes explanatory text, diagrams, photographs, that crosses the threshold. The selection and arrangement of information involves creative choices. It's a low bar, and most manuals clear it.
Even the ones that are basically insert tab A into slot B.
Even those. The diagram is a creative work. The wording of the instructions involves choices about clarity and sequence. Copyright protection is automatic and the threshold is minimal. You don't have to be writing literature.
So the law treats a microwave manual and a novel the same way. Same term, same protections, same penalties for infringement.
Formally, yes. In practice, nobody enforces manual copyrights the way publishers enforce book copyrights. But the law on the books doesn't distinguish.
Which brings us back to Daniel's original question. Should he upload?
If the manufacturer exists and has a permissive policy, yes, with minimal risk. If the manufacturer exists and has no policy, ask first or accept the small but non-zero risk. If the manufacturer doesn't exist, the risk is lowest of all in practical terms, but the legal analysis is actually worse because there's no one to grant permission and the copyright is still valid.
The safest path if you want zero legal exposure is to keep the scans in his personal system and not distribute them. Personal archiving. Scanning a manual you own for your own use is almost certainly fair use. It's the distribution that creates the legal issue.
Which is frustrating, because the whole point is helping other people find the manual. The personal scan solves Daniel's problem. The upload solves everyone else's.
And that's the tension Daniel's feeling. He's got a solution that works for him. And he wants to extend it to strangers on the internet, and the law says that's the part that gets you in trouble.
I think we need a perspective from someone who's actually been on the other side of this equation.
Go on.
Sony TAE-9000ES.
The preamplifier?
Digital preamp. 1998. I worked for a small audio company in Connecticut that made a line of home theater processors. We sold maybe 4,000 units total across three models. The company was called Meridian Audio Technologies. Not the British Meridian, the Connecticut one, that lasted 6 years and got bought by a holding company and dissolved. I wrote the manuals, WordPerfect 6.1, printed them on a LaserJet 4 in the back office. Spiral Bound at Kinko's. There's a copyright notice on page 2, copyright 1998 Meridian Audio Technologies, all rights reserved. That copyright is still valid. The company doesn't exist. The holding company that bought it was bought by another holding company. I tried to trace the IP once and gave up after 3 phone calls. If someone scanned one of those manuals and uploaded it to ManualsLib, I'd be thrilled. Genuinely. I still have the original WordPerfect files on a zip disk in a box. But legally, the copyright belongs to an entity that no longer functions and can't be reached. And the manual says all rights reserved. So the uploader is infringing. There's no question about it.
Do you want the manuals to be available?
Of course I do. I wrote them. They're good manuals. There's a section on room acoustics that I'm still proud of. But wanting it and having the legal right to authorize it are different things. I don't own the copyright. I was an employee. It was work for hire.
And you have no way to reach the rights holder.
The rights holder is a shell company inside a shell company. I don't even know if anyone at the parent entity knows they own a defunct audio brand's IP. If you called them and said, I'd like to scan your 1998 product manuals, they'd probably hang up. This is the part that nobody talks about. Most of the people who created these manuals, the engineers, the technical writers, they want the documentation to survive. It's their work. They put effort into making it clear and useful. The idea that it's locked up for 95 years because of a legal framework that never contemplated this scenario, it's absurd. But it's also the law.
And the copyright notice on page 2 means it's not even an orphan work in the strict sense. You know who owns it. You just can't reach them.
Right. It's not that the owner is unknown, it's that the owner is unreachable and probably doesn't know they own it. That's a different category, and the proposed orphan works legislation wouldn't have covered it. The good faith search requirement assumes the owner can be found. If you know the owner exists but can't get a response, you're still stuck.
That's a really important distinction. The orphan works problem is usually framed as, we don't know who owns this. But there's a whole category of works where we know exactly who owns them. A defunct entity, a dissolved corporation, an estate that doesn't answer letters, and there's still no path to permission.
I've got 4 of those processors in my basement. 2 still work. The manuals are in a filing cabinet. I've thought about scanning them. I haven't, because I know the copyright situation, and I don't want the headache. But if someone else did it, I wouldn't be upset.
That's the thing. The people who actually created the work want it preserved. The legal entity that owns it doesn't know it exists, and the law sides with the entity.
The law doesn't know the entity is a P.O. box in Delaware. It just knows there's a copyright, and it hasn't expired.
What would you tell Daniel? Same situation, different product.
I'd tell him to check whether the company has a policy. If they do, follow it. If they don't, and the product is more than 10 years old, and the company is defunct, I'm not giving legal advice. I'm just saying I wouldn't lose sleep over it. But I'd also tell him to keep good records. If you upload something, save a copy of the search you did to try to find the rights holder. Save the Wayback Machine link showing the company's website was down. If someone ever comes asking, you want to be able to show you made a good faith effort. It's not a legal defense, but it's the kind of thing that makes a plaintiff less interested in pursuing you.
Documentation. About documentation. Very on brand.
I'm serious. The practical risk management here's about making yourself an unattractive target. If a rights holder surfaces and sees that you tried to find them, and you're hosting a manual for a product they don't sell anymore, and you'll take it down immediately if they ask, most of them are going to send a takedown notice and move on. The statutory damages only come into play if they decide to sue, and they're not going to sue someone who's clearly acting in good faith over a 20-year-old manual.
Unless the manual is for something that still has commercial value. Service manuals for current medical equipment, for example, that's a different risk profile entirely.
Completely different. I'm talking about consumer products. Toasters, VCRs, stereo equipment. The stuff where the only people looking for the manual are hobbyists and repair shops.
The line between consumer and commercial gets blurry fast, though. A manual for a discontinued lab centrifuge, is that consumer or commercial? The person looking for it's probably a researcher in a developing country who can't afford new equipment.
That's where the preservation argument is strongest and the legal path is weakest. The manual has enormous practical value to someone who needs it. The rights holder has no commercial interest in it. And the law provides no mechanism to bridge that gap.
If you take one thing from this episode, it's that the gap between what the law says and what makes sense for preservation isn't an accident. It's a design feature. The copyright system was built for a world where publishing was expensive and distribution was controlled. It was never updated for a world where anyone can scan a document and make it available to everyone. And Congress has had multiple opportunities to fix the orphan works problem and hasn't done it.
The other piece I'd want people to remember is that the practical risk and the legal risk are different things, and Daniel's personal risk from uploading an old manual is low. But the systemic problem is real, and it means we're losing documentation that can't be replaced. The long tail stays long because the law makes it hard to shorten it.
The question I keep coming back to is whether copyright laws should treat user manuals differently from creative works. The economic argument for manual copyright is weak. Nobody is buying a manual instead of a product. The manual exists to support the product, and when the product is discontinued and the company is gone, the manual serves no commercial purpose. But the law doesn't make that distinction, and changing it would require Congress to care about a problem that affects a tiny number of people.
Right to repair laws are chipping away at this from one direction. If manufacturers are required to provide documentation for current products, maybe eventually that requirement extends backward. But that's a long fight, and in the meantime, the archive depends on people who are willing to scan and upload despite the uncertainty.
Daniel's best practical path check for explicit permission where possible, upload only to platforms with clear DMCA processes, and accept that the long tail will remain long for the foreseeable future. The manuals that are hardest to find will stay hard to find, not because the technology is difficult, but because the law hasn't caught up to the problem.
If you're sitting on a box of manuals for products from companies that don't exist anymore, you're holding something that has real value to someone, somewhere. The legal path to sharing, it's messy. But the fact that you kept them at all is already more than most people did.
We should thank our producer Hilbert Flumingtop for keeping the show running, and for the ZipDisk story.
If you've got a weird prompt you want us to dig into copyright arcana, home inventory systems, or anything in between, email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com.
This has been My Weird Prompts. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.